Okay, good evening. It's Thursday, the 19th of October, and it is 8 p.m. Eastern, and this is the Healthy Healing Call. Welcome.
And welcome, everybody. Go ahead, Robert. Did you want to say more?
No, go ahead.
All right, and last week, we got talking about some great projects and stuff like that, and our beloved Jan came up with the point that he knew how to do, I just forgot the word, dowsing. And so I go, wow, what a great healing method that is. So we have a speaker for tonight, and it's about dowsing. Dan, what is dowsing and why is it important and how old is it?
Oh, is it old? It's ancient. They have pictures on cave walls of the cave people dowsing things. I really first got exposed to it back about 1995 or 6. A friend of mine had been out to a conference at the Ozark Research Institute, and they were into energy healing and dowsing for healing and dowsing and healing with the mind and all this kind of stuff. So I went out, and my wife and I went out, and they have two sessions a year. In the springtime, they have one-hour presentation by maybe 30 people. It goes on for like 3 days, and in September, around Labor Day, they have a five-day session where you spend one full day with each teacher learning how to do whatever their healing modality is. And at that time, they had three of the top dowsers in the country, probably in the world. One of them was Harold McCoy, who uses dowsing to douse out the body and then uses energy to remove things from the body. They had Walt Woods, who has developed a really super healing dowsing program with the pendulum. And they had Tom Milleran, who was more or less a Elrod type of specialist. And they also, I met Dave Royer, who teaches the water dowsing up at the annual American Society of Dowsers meeting that's held every summer, late summer. It's in Danville, Vermont. It's just up near St. Johnsbury. Anyone that would like to go to that, it's open to everyone. I think it's 3 days at least, maybe longer. And it fills up pretty fast. They take over a small university up there. And so you can get dorm rooms and so on, and they have meetings in the main conference halls. So it's a relatively cheap experience if you want to learn how to douse. Now, one of the things that I would like to talk about first is a book called Letter to Robin, and it's a mini course in pendulum dowsing, and it is available. It used to be, I don't know, $1, $2, $4 from the American Society of Dowsers bookstore, and it's on the web. You can look it up, and you can order it on the web, or just give them a call and ask for a letter for letter to Robin, and they'll know exactly what you mean. Now, there are, and this I'm taking pieces out of that document to start with, there are certain basic dowsing tools that you need, and this booklet covers four of them: pendulum, L-rods, Y-rods, and bobbers. And most people become proficient in one of them. A few use two of them. I don't know anybody that routinely uses all four of them. Now, if you want to talk about pendulums first, a pendulum is anything that you can hang on a string. Usually it's 4 to 6 inches long. And on the bottom, you need something that has a little weight. Even a piece of thread and a paper clip can be called a pendulum. I know a fellow that uses baler twine and a washer. On the American Society of Dowsers bookstore, they have all sorts of fancy pendulums. I used to use one that had a chain. It was about 6 inches long and had like a very short, squatty plumb bob on the end. It was quite heavy. And it's always interesting to see that start through a swing and halfway through make a right or left hand turn. So you can use anything you like. It doesn't matter. It can be a piece of thread. It can be with a button on it. If you have a favorite necklace, it's a chain that's very flexible that has a nice pendant on the bottom. You can use that. The advantages of pendulum dowsing is that pendulums are easy to make. They're easy to use. They're popular. You can drop them in your purse, and they have a very quick response. Well, pendulums have a way. They have a mind of their own. If you're looking for a pendulum, all of a sudden you'll see one, and it just fits you. It's like buying a pair of shoes. You find that one that just fits. That's the one you buy. If you're already into dowsing, you can use your pendulum to decide which one you should buy. Just go through the list and have it pick it for you. Now, some of the disadvantages you run into, if you take it outside and you're using it to wind, if it's too lightweight, it will be bothered. That's why I used a heavy bobber on it. Other than that, there really isn't any particular disadvantage. Now, the second kind of L-rods, and Tom Milleran from Erie taught that section, an L-rod is a basic L-shaped piece of usually wire, steel. People use welding rods. They use coat hangers, anything at all that is stiff and can be bent into an L shape. Now, you usually make them with a handle, the short part of the L, maybe 3-4 inches long, and you might make the horizontal part, the long part, up to 2 feet long. I have a friend who's was in my remote healing group for about 14 years, and she likes the little bitty short ones. They're about 1.75 to 2 inches long is all. And she puts them in her purse, and she puts them around the house. And so wherever she goes, when she's buying food, she douses to see which food she should buy and that sort of thing. Over a period of time, she drops them out of her purse or loses them in a store and so on. So she buys them in threes, and I just dropped her off another three. Should be good for a couple of years, I hope. Now, the longer ones I make out of... we have somebody here that I'm going to... Doreen, I'm going to mute you because I'm picking up noise on you. I use fairly heavy brazing rod for them because you use them outside and you don't want the wind to blow them around. So you make them fairly heavy. It's handy, and they work better if you have a sleeve on the short part of the L that you hold in your hand. Otherwise, you have to hold them real loosely in your hand because you don't want to impede the motion of the rod. And there isn't a lot of force on the rod when it moves. For the little small ones that are maybe 4 to 6 inches long, I just use a piece of 1/8-inch copper pipe and slip it over a piece of welding rod. Now, to use that, and we'll get into programming pendulums in a little bit here, but to use it, you just hold it loosely in your hand, or if you have the outer sleeve on your L-rod, you just hold it tightly in your hand, and you have the tip down just a little bit. Then you can program it to answer questions, yes, no questions, to count, to look for water lines, all that sort of thing. If you're using a single one, you can program it to make a right angle turn when you're over an object, when you're over a pipeline, a water line, electrical line, underground source of water, that sort of thing. When you're looking outside for things, normally you use two rods and you have them pointed straight ahead. And when they turn and cross over one over the other and they're perpendicular to your arm as you're holding them, you've arrived right over the top of the line or whatever it is you're looking for. And it's good to then walk to the other side and come back and check from the other direction. And they should give you exactly the same point. If they don't, just average the difference in the two and take the midpoint. Now, that sort of thing works very well. Even when I worked at Penn State, some of the people in the water department used L-rods to find the water lines around campus, and they've got 1,000 of them everywhere. I needed to dig a line to my root cellar some time ago, and I knew I had a 4-inch pipe running down through there, so I went out and doused where it was, found exactly where it was, put a marker on the ground and started digging, and I forgot to ask how deep it was, because about the second bite I pulled it right up. So you need to ask your questions properly and think carefully about them, not just where is it, but how deep is it, would have been a good thing to do there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you've probably all heard about the old fellow that has the red handkerchief in his back pocket hanging out, and he goes over to the apple, pear, beech, whatever tree, cuts off a little forked branch. It might be maybe 18 inches long, and it looks like a slingshot. It's like a Y. And he'll hold the two smaller ends of the Y and walk along, and when he goes over a water vein, it'll point down real hard. And that's where you drill for water. He'll also then probably bounce them up and down and ask, okay, how many feet to water? And he'll start counting. And when he gets up to 10 feet or wherever the water is it 15 feet, when he counts 50, the end of that stick will pull right down like it did to locate the water. And then you can ask questions like, is there sulfur in the water? You don't want sulfur water. And he'll just bounce it up and down, and he'll have defined what a yes or a no is for his forked stick. And if you watch these guys, they're holding onto that stick really, really tightly. And the end is that they're holding on, those two ends, does not move, but the tip still bends right down just as easily as if it's spaghetti. It's really something to watch.
Mm.
Now, and the advantages of that are it acts quickly. It can point directly towards a water vein or target. It works well while you're walking up and down over rough ground and that sort of thing. And it's reliable in fairly strong winds because that is a pretty strong force that pulls that tip down. Disadvantages, it's not as versatile as the other dowsing tools because it only has an up or down motion. So you need to turn your body to find direction and things like that. Now, this last one you don't see much of, but certain people love it, and nobody else does. It's called a bobber. And you can make one out of just get a little wooden handle, maybe 4 or 5 inches long. Get yourself about a close to 3-foot piece of steel welding rod, thin, 3/16 or less, and stick it into that wooden handle. And the way you use that is you just hold it in your hand out in front of you, and you ask it, for example, you'll need a yes and no if you're going to ask questions. So you ask it to give you a yes, and you just watch it. And pretty soon it'll be bouncing up and down, or it'll be going right to left, or it might be going diagonally. And you ask it to give you a no, and it'll do something else. And from then on, that bobber is programmed to you. And if you ask a question, it'll give you a yes like it did initially, or a no like it did initially. One of the pendulum and healing workshops I gave, I had a young gal about 14. She was of German extraction. Her mother came over from East Germany. And when she saw that bobber at the first break, she borrowed it from me. She went out and sat in the hall or on a stool, and she just sat that and ran that thing up and down. The end of that bobber would move 6 inches. And she could go yes, no, and maybe, and all these other things. It was really fun to watch. So it's another way. It works for I guess, most people that try it, but most people don't consider it that useful. Most people use either L-rods or a pendulum. Now, there's other ways as well. Some people who are clairvoyant just imagine that pendulum in their mind, and they watch and see which way it swings when they ask a question. They define first a yes, and they define a no. They ask a question, they watch with their eyes closed in a meditative state which direction it goes. That's kind of handy, because if you lose your pendulum, it doesn't matter. If you lose your yellow rods, it doesn't matter. As long as you don't lose your mind, you're all set. Now, some people, I'm not clairvoyant, I'm clairaudient. I don't see anything, almost never, except in dreams. But for clairaudient, you can ask a question and listen to the answer. So instead of having a pendulum or an L-rod or a bobber or a Y-rod, you ask the question and you listen for the answer. And you get your directions that way. Now, there's other forms like kinesiology. Oh, maybe 5-6 years ago, I was working with people over in Athens, Ohio. They had a large healing group. I used to go over and work with people there. And they had a fellow from I'd call it an alternative energy institute up in Columbus, came down to where I was staying, to the people I was staying with for dinner one night. And he was into all sorts of healing modalities as well. And he had been using for some time to test for pills, medications, and stuff like that. Hold it in your hand, and you're leaning forward a little bit. If you lean forward, it was a yes, and if you didn't move, it was a no. So there's another way that you can get indications. I'd never tried it before, but sure enough, it does work, as long as you have whatever it is you're testing in your hand. Okay, now that you know a little bit about the basic tools, you need to program whatever device it is you're using. It's just like programming a digital computer. No program, no go, no fun, no nothing. Now, Walt Woods' book, The Letter to Robin, gives you a very definite way to program your pendulum. And I would highly recommend it for anybody that wants to learn to pendulum dowse, where you're not going to the American Association of Dowsers and learning there. Just because it is very thorough, very complete, provides the protections you need and all that sort of thing. And I'm not going to read through the programming, but some of the key things about it is when you're going to douse, for example, if you're doing healing work and you want to douse information on whoever you're working on, you always ask permission. You use may I, should I, before, you know, douse interesting effects on whoever it is that you're working on. If you get a no, you don't go any further. You don't douse. It's not the time. You come back later, try again. Sometimes you never will get approval. Sometimes you'll get approval to douse on certain issues in their life, that sort of thing. I remember early on when I started dowsing, I was a little bit irritated with my wife one night. I'd been doing some healing work on her the day before, and I went back, may I, can I, should I douse interesting effects on her? And he said, no, no, no. So I came back a day later when I'd calmed down and said, sure. So you have to be in a meditative state to use it properly. And you can't be irritated. You know, you have to relax. It's just like you're going to do a meditation. You sit down with your pendulum and ask permission. It's the first thing you do. Now, part of your programming would be to define yes, no, maybe. And one of the things I liked about Walt's technique is he has charts. And, for example, he programs things. He doesn't leave it to the pendulum to decide. He programs yes as up and down on a chart. So if you were holding your pendulum out, it would be swinging in line with your arm. And no would be right angles to that. And ready for question is 45 degrees from the lower left to the upper right on the page that you're looking at. He also has numbers. And some of these have percents and just all sorts of information on them. So you swing your pendulum on the ready to douse line and you ask a question. What should I eat for supper? Think about your question very carefully, because it cannot answer what should you eat for supper. You could say something like, should I eat chard for supper tonight? Swing your pendulum and ready to douse, and it'll go to yes, or it'll go to no, or sometimes it'll go to maybe, because there's other factors influencing it. Maybe you can only have chard if you have something else with it, for example. It gets to be very tricky, and you have to ask a definable question. It can't be, it cannot be an open-ended question. The same is true about L-rods, those you define. for example, when I use a single L-rod, I will define, starting with my L-rod pointing directly away from me in line with my arm. If I ask a question, if it's a yes, it'll move to the right. And the tip of the L-rod will move to the right. If it's no, it just doesn't move. I have a counting program in there so I can count from one to a gazillion. And if I say this is a counting program, that L-rod will swing completely around counterclockwise, just about up against my arm as far as it can go, and I'll start counting. And if the number I'm looking for is 10, I'll just start counting 1, 2, 3, and each time I say a number, it'll move maybe 10 degrees. And I can go 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. When I got up to 10, since that's the number that I was trying to count, it'll stop moving at that point and go no further. So I know that the number of things I was looking for, maybe it was the percent of energy coming out of some person's chakra or something. So the pendulum system knew it was 10 and it stops counting. If you keep counting and it just keeps going, you start counting in bigger loops. You go back to a count again, and I'll count by 10. So I start 10, 20, 30, and each time I say a number, the pen or the L-rod will move about 10 degrees. And when I get up to the number, it'll stop. If it doesn't stop, I'll count by hundreds. So you can count by thousands. You can count by millions. You can count by any increment you like so that you can zero in on whatever the answer to your question is. Now, bobbers, since I've never really worked with a bobber, and there's relatively few things that you can do with them, I'm not sure if you can count with them. I've never tried it. It could be it'll just lie dormant until you hit the number you're looking at and then start vibrating. I don't really know. Now, one of the things that you need to know, in fact, I got an excellent reference. One of the people that I met at the Ozark Research Institute was a chiropractor from New York State. And he had developed a manual, it must have been 100 pages long, that had charts for every conceivable thing that could ever pass into a person, could happen to a person. Charts for a whole bunch of different causes for maladies. They could be chemical, they could be energy, they could be this, they could be that. And one of the charts that it had in there is one that you can check, and you can use Walt's charts as well. How much can you trust your dowsing? And you should check this periodically, like, you know, every few days. And you need a percent scale to do that. And your question that you would ask is, what percent am I influencing my dowsing? And if you're using Walt's technique, you just swing it in the 45-degree angle, ready to douse mode. And it would move around to the percent scale and settle on a certain percentage. Now, that should be zero. When you first start dowsing, I would hazard a guess it's up in the 40 to 50%. Thoughts are things, you know. And if you think you know the answer to the question you're asking, that will influence your pendulum. You have to be real careful about that. Another thing that you need to ask and check periodically is what or who is influencing your dowsing. And the chiropractor had a nice chart for that. There's all sorts of things that can influence it. And you need to keep track of that because you want only good things influencing your dowsing. As you all know, we accumulate both positive and negative energy over our lifetimes, and you don't want the negatives controlling your dowsing. Now, some of the fun things that you can do, and I learned to do while I was in ORI, was my next-door neighbor had a well, and it was, he was just up on the hill above me, and it was going dry. So he drilled a second well, and that well had sulfur in it. He was getting to be pretty much beside himself after drilling two deep wells. So one of the things, I ran into Dave Royer, who was next door to us, our roommate in the dorm we stayed in at Ori. And since he is the expert on water dowsing for American Society of Dowsers, I was telling him about it. And he says, oh, he says, we can fix that. And I says, oh, really? And I says, how do you fix that? So first, he went through and ran us through the Walt Woods book on creating a program for dowsing. And he says, draw me a map. I said, what do you mean, draw you a map? Well, just draw me a map of his place. I said, well, you know, I know about where the buildings are. I don't know the dimensions. He says, it doesn't matter what the dimensions are. Just draw me kind of a picture, like, of his place. So I kind of sketched out his garage here. He's got a breezeway, and his house is here, and so on. He says, yeah, that's good. So he proceeds to do map dowsing. And you can do map dowsing with L-rods or a pendulum. You can take a ruler. And normally it'll lay the map out north-south, so you take a ruler or a straight piece of paper, and you start at the bottom of the paper and move it toward the top. And your question might be, if you're using a pendulum, please give me a yes when I cross over a water line, a source of water that could be useful to fill this particular well. And so he moved up the paper and finally got an indication from his pendulum that he'd found it. So he drew a line along that piece of paper. Then he went north-south, and he went across the map the other way, and he came to a point where his pendulum said, yes, you're crossing a line, you made an X. And then he did it again, looking for a second line on that source of water. And so he went horizontally and then vertically. So he got north-south, east-west pinpointed, and he drew a line between the two so he could see where that vein of water was going. And he says, well, from where that vein is to get to your well, or to Eric's well, it was my neighbor Eric, he said, we can't go under a building, so we'll go along the south side of his garage and then go between his house and his breezeway up to the well. I says, okay. So then the next thing he does is douse out, how many times do I have to tap? He put a pin on the point where he was going to move the water from. How many times do I have to tap that pin to move it from there over to the west side of the garage? And it said 27, I think. So he puts the pin on that point, and he tapped it with his finger 27 times. He says, okay, let's go to dinner. I says, aren't you going to finish? He says, oh, we can finish after dinner. He says, I'll give a chance to water to move. So we went over and had dinner. We came back about an hour later. He says, okay, let's finish up. So he put the pin on the point where we moved the water to and asked how many times he had to tap the pin to move it up to the well. And it was something like 14, 15. So he puts it on and taps it, and he said, I'll be real quiet. And so about a minute later, he says, up. He says, it worked. I can hear the water running into the well. I said, well, that's kind of cool. So a week later when we got home, we were out in Fayetteville, Arkansas doing this. We came back to central Pennsylvania, and I called up Eric. And I says, hey, Eric, how's your water supply? Oh, the little thing ran dry while you were gone. I had to run a garden hose over from my mother's house, you know, and we're limping around washing dishes and drinking water, and that's all we do. I says, tell you what, when I was out in Arkansas, we worked on your well. And I says, I know that if it didn't work, there are people there that can divert water into your well. I says, you know, have you got any water today? He said, well, I don't know. We haven't tried. We're not taking anything out of the well. Don't want to touch it. I says, tell you what. Take your pump, stick it down the well, and run it till it runs dry. And we'll see how it works. And I'll come up in the morning about 10, 11, and if you're out of water, you know, I'll call the guys out there and have them do it again. He says, he was a little bit shy, and but he'd heard about dowsing and so on. So he said, okay. So the next morning, about 11:30, I had time to run up. And I go up. I see the pipe coming straight out of the well, and it's shooting water up in the air, and the water's running down through the yard. So I look up Eric, and I says, well, what's the story? He says, well, I don't know how good it is. He says, I've been running the pump all night long at max volume, as hard as it can go, and I can't pump it down. So we went over and looked in the well, and it was within a foot or so of what it had been before he started losing water. So later that year, in the middle of winter, I happened to see Eric, and I said, hey, Eric, how's your well doing? He said, oh, that damn thing's running over. The water's running down in front of the house, and my driveway's all slippery and icy. He says, I don't know what to do. So apparently it worked very well, and it still is. This is 20 years later. Okay, so that's one thing you can do with dowsing. Now, Walt Woods has a program for healing in his booklet. And if I can find it, it has about 25 or 30 different things that he has learned over the years need to be corrected or balanced or appropriate and proper. And so he has a routine that he reads in and programs his pendulum so that he can correct any one of these different items. And if you like format and you like rigid things, I would highly recommend that you get his booklet and learn to douse it. It's called the Conditions Program. I can read you just quickly what the not necessarily the definitions, but the titles of each one of these items is. The first is meridians, acupuncture points, so on. Second is aura, centering, energy levels, balancing, filling holes, faults, color balance in the chakra, energies, love, vital force, life energies, prana, chi, so on and so on. Noxious energies in the home, workplace, other living quarters. Vitamin C, B, pantothenic acid, and so on. Vitamin balance, minerals, calcium and other allied minerals, and so forth. Body balance, oxygen, salts, fluids, sugars, nutrition, energy, sleep, rest. Then you get into things like mind, energies, force, function, controllability, stress, stability, communications. Emotional level, hormone influence, environment, substance effect, food, medication, and so forth. Attitude, images about health, life, people, society, world, self, patterns, mindsets, so on, so on, so on. And so I'll just read the titles. Nervous system, clashing, sapping, past lives, spiritual entities, other influences, shielding, ions and electrolytes, amino acids, alkali, acid-base balance, toxins, infections, allergies, systems like the immune system and so on, organs, pain, pressure, and others known or unknown. So that covers everything but the kitchen sink. And you can work on healing those. Now, there's other things that you can do with either L-rod or pendulum dowsing. There's a section in Walt's book about substance program, it's called. It's about food. And what you can do is increase the wholeness and decrease the negativity of your food. You ever wonder why the avatars, or whatever you want to call them, don't eat out? Their food, even though it's organic and everything else, is prepared only by their initiates. They do not want the energy of the public as large preparing their food. If the cook had a really bad day, or if the person that bought the food at the market got in a big argument with somebody, all sorts of things, all those negative effects are added to that food. So by using the food program, you can remove all of that negativity. I'll warn you right up front, though, if you do that, you need to eat less, or you're going to start putting on pounds. You need to eat maybe 20-30% less than you normally would, because it's more nutritious and healthful for you. Now, there's another thing you can check for and find and remove, and that's called noxious energies. And these are caused or created within the earth, and they come straight up out of the earth and head out into space. And you can walk along and douse for noxious energy zones just like you did for water lines, water pipes, and that sort of thing. And when you find one, you can use any number of techniques. You can drive stakes in the ground and short it out. You can run a loop of wire with a, I think it's a 1-inch gap around the inside of your house to short it out, and so on. If you get a point where two of these cross, that's a very bad place to be. And if it's under your house, you better do something to negate it. I know in Germany, for example, they believe in things like dowsing, and when they build an autobahn, they check that whole route before they build it to see if there are any noxious energy zones, in particular more than one crossing at a point, because they'll have chaos at that point. I know I've gone around Kansas City on 35 to the east side of town, it's probably 235, and then it breaks off to 35 north. And I think it's three or four times I've gone through there. And right at that junction, all of a sudden, all hell breaks loose. And you lay on the brakes, and everybody's just skittering every which direction. And finally, you get off without getting hit. And I'm sure there is a noxious energy zone and at that point. Every time, the exact same place it occurs. Now, if you want to see it without a dowsing rod, if you have some noxious energy zones around your house, go out and look if you have trees around. Take a look at those trees. They will tend to bend. You know, a tree normally goes straight up. Gravity is a great thing. It gives them a clue as to where they ought to grow so they are balanced, and that's straight up. But if you have noxious energy zones, they'll tend to tilt away the higher they go away from that noxious energy zone. So if you look down through a woods and you see trees, right, left, and you can see a line going down, straight line down between them, they're doing that to get away from that noxious energy. Sometimes in a parking lot, you'll see gaps in the asphalt. You know, when they roll that out flat, it's one contiguous mass. But you'll look and you'll find maybe half-inch cracks running right down through that that go clean through the blacktop. And that's what noxious energy does. Now, with the pendulum, you can put in a noxious energy program. There's one in Walt Woods' book. And you can use that to negate it, as well as running the loop around, copper wire around the inside of the house. I have one in my basement all the way around the inside. And there's also a way using steel stakes to put them in the ground. It's kind of similar to the moving water technique where you put a stake in. Now, if you were doing the diversion of water from one stream into a well, something like that, you can do it with L-rods outside the house instead of map dowsing. You can find where on your property there is a source of energy. And when you get your 2 points, you can take a stake and drive it in the ground at one of them and find out how many times you need to tap it and move it that way. You can do it physically, full scale as well as very small scale on a map. Most of these things are interchangeable. You can do them either way. Now, you probably wonder, why does dowsing work? Well, if you're totally influencing your pendulum or your L-rod, it works because your mind is controlling it. I've seen that dowsing rod of mine, or my pendulum, I mean, swinging away from me, and it got straight up and down, and it would just make a left or a right-hand turn. So it went from a yes to a no, 90 degrees. And there's no way, knowing the conservation of energy, physics, anything else applied to that problem, that would allow it to do that unless somebody took a finger and poked it. And when you're watching it, you know that is not happening. So there is something that moves that pendulum. Now, what is it? Well, some people call it the dowsing system, the pendulum system. You can name it anything you like. I cannot define it for you. It can be whatever you think it is. As long as it works for you, it doesn't really matter. Let's see, there's a couple thoughts I wanted to leave you with, if I can find them. Anyway, here's some cautions. I've seen people take my dowsing course and sit there making life decisions 5 minutes after they first swung a pendulum. That is the worst, absolutely most crazy thing one could ever do. They say you should never use dowsing to determine anything critical until you've been dowsing consistently for probably a year. Anything before that, it gets to be risky. Now, to always remember to ask permission before you douse information on anybody, even yourself. They may not want you to know what you want to know about yourself. Three, also, check what is influencing your dowsing. It better well be the good side and not you. And then four, check periodically to see who is controlling your pendulum, your L-rods, or whatever you're dowsing with. Now, there's 101 little things that you can use dowsing for. For example, one of the first things I learned to do and had a lot of fun with over the years, there are sources of energy around you in all directions. Okay, that's kind of like his Wonder End knows. HF energy for the hands can come in horizontally. It can come in from some angle above the earth. It can come in some direction, which is a great circle route to where that energy originated at. With an L-rod, is the easiest way to determine it. You can locate the direction that energy is coming from. Then you can use your L-rod. Well, probably before you determine where it's coming from, use your L-rod to check a person's aura. Some people are really lucky. They can see a person's aura. They can walk up to you and just, it's there for them. I know one gal that can see them. She can see your past lives. She can see anything she wants to about you. It's kind of scary. But I never was visual, so I learned to douse the aura out with L-rods. Now, once you put that program in, you can douse any layer of the aura that you like. In terms of layers, the first layer, and I never bothered to name them, but it's called the etheric. It's the closest to the physical body. It's maybe a half inch from the body to an inch. Second layer is the emotional. It's a little bit farther out. Third layer is the mental, and that's the one I normally douse because it's far enough away from the body. If you're good and healthy, it's 9 to 12 inches from the body. Fourth is the astral, fifth the etheric, sixth the celestial, and the seventh is the etheric. Now, if you douse a person's aura, say you're looking for the third layer, the edge of the third layer of their aura, you would program your L-rod to give you an indication, which means turn from pointing straight at the person you're walking toward to a right angle, either to the right or to the left, clockwise or counterclockwise, at the very edge of the aura of the third layer. And you'll find that if you move slow enough, you'll just see your L-rod start to turn slowly, and when you get just perpendicular to your arm, you're right on the edge. Now, I usually take 8 cuts. I stand directly in front of a person, go from head to toe, move over 45 degrees, and I usually go around to my right, I guess I would say their left, and do 8 cuts, one on the right shoulder, quarter on the back, directly on the back, over to 45 off towards the, that would have been the left shoulder, 45 off the right shoulder, and then 45 degrees in front. That will pretty well give you a feel for the aura. Now, you will find that some places there's very little energy. And when that happens, sometimes you'll be able to go clear into the person's body before the L-rod turns. And if that happens, you can just back up a little bit and start to move the L-rod out a little bit bigger and just keep going in a circle until the aileron starts to turn, and that'll tell you the area, how big it is. And that's an area where there's what we call a hole. Some people have tears. That means that the energy from the top to the bottom in the aura is missing. It's like a crack in the aura. Neither of these are a desirable feature. Now, once you've determined that a person has a problem, if you want, you can also determine how many negative energies they have in them and stuff like that. You can use your L-Rod. You have a program that says count the number of negative energies. If it gets to be more than two or three, you want to get rid of them too. And the way you do that is you go back to that etheric energy coming in from around the surface around you. And you take your L-Rod and you hold the L-Rod in the hand that you're going to run energy out of. And you start to turn slowly in a 360-degree complete circle. And at some point in there, that L-Rod will point, and as you move by, it'll start to bend away and still keep pointing at a given point. If you back up, it'll point directly at it. That's the point the energy is coming from. The altitude or angle that it's coming in, you can determine by moving your hand to point up or down as you're running energy. And what you would do is stand the person in front of you, put your hand up, pointing just in the horizontal direction that etheric energy comes from, and you begin to turn your hand clockwise on the top of their head, above their head. And as you do, you'll feel energy come in your... Well, I use my right hand to run the energy out of it, so the energy would come into my left hand and go out my right. And if you move your arm up and down a little bit, you'll find where that energy peaks. And you just keep doing that, running that energy, spinning it in a clockwise direction until they stop taking energy. I've had some kids that love these monster... They're not running shoes. I don't know what they are. Maybe they're some famous basketball player's shoes or something. But the rubber is so thick you can't drive energy into them. It's like an engineering problem. Kick off your shoes, give me some bare feet, and all of a sudden they start taking up energy real well. I had it. Generally, when you do that, when you're done, you do several other closings, but you remind them you need to drink a lot of water because they're going to be dumping a lot of toxins for the rest of the day. And normally they will sleep very well that night. He's a psychiatrist. He's the head of the substance abuse hospital facility in Athens. And he teaches for a small college there non-traditional healing techniques. And so I went over one spring and took a session for him and trained his class for a four-hour session. And then noon break, I did healings and clearings on people. This one gal slept terribly, always came to class half hour early. And I was talking to my friend about a week later. And he says, you know that gal? She didn't come in till 11 o'clock in the morning, missed half the class. She'd had so much garbage in her, when she finally got cleared out, she slept so well she didn't even wake up until after 10, which I thought was kind of interesting. Okay, so you can have fun doing that sort of thing. What time do you want to chop off here, Robert? It's 51 after... Must have put Robert to sleep.
Robert. Did Robert go to sleep?
Well, I don't know.
No, but I was talking.
Oh, okay.
I was
clairaudiently trying to listen to you, but I couldn't hear you.
Well, we got less than 4 minutes. This is probably a good cutoff time.
Okay. I might make one other comment.
Okay.
About healing, and this is true of anybody with a major disease. They come to you, they say, I want to be healed. Woe is me, I have this terrible malady. And you say, okay, we'll help you heal. And they have what I call resistance to healing. And you think, why on earth would anyone who has cancer, has a heart problem, has a rash that they've had for a year, all of these different things they show up, why would they not want to heal? Well, I think the best example might be, take someone who's in a situation, work situation, has to work, got a boss that just hates his guts, gives him a hard time all the time. He frets and sweats and carries on and takes on the negative energy year after year until finally he has a heart attack. And some of those people get smart with their first heart attack and they say, oh, whoa, I'm not going back in there. Look what it did to me. And those people generally survive. But those that don't and they go right back in a year or two, they have another heart attack. And so when you think about it, there's other reasons people have a disease. You know, you meet people on the street and say, how are you doing today? Oh, my lumbago's back, my knee is killing me, I can hardly walk, I have indigestion. Don't ask them because they're going to tell you. And if they heal, they will no longer have that crutch, that excuse, that topic to talk about. And it is a factor in any healing I ever did. You think they want to heal. They tell you they want to heal. But deep down inside, they know their life is going to change if they heal. And it could change drastically. For example, they might even have to look for a new job and various and sundry other things. So let's break it there, shall we, Robert?
Yep.
Okey-dokey.
Very good.
I hope everyone enjoyed this. It was. I enjoyed it.
I did too. It was tremendous. Thank you so much, Jan. That was great.
Sure. Sure. Like I say, it's dredging up 20 years ago work and up to about 5-10 years ago. And I should have prepared better. I just didn't think about it in time. Anyway, I enjoyed it. Hope everybody had fun. We'll
you
catch you later.
Great. Thank you so much. Wow. Yeah. That was super. You're hired. Okay.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Stop the recording now.